All right. My name is Norma King, and today is May 2nd, 2015. I'm interviewing Margaret Pixley James of Liberty, Missouri, and we are at the Woodneath Library Center in Kansas City, Missouri. I've known Margaret for many years. She was born March 7th, 1927, and is 88 years old. She's been an active community member, serving as a teacher. She's been on the school board and done many other things she'll tell us about. She's retired now only in words and maintains a very busy life. She's currently the Liberty City Treasurer, an honorary position for which she is paid one silver dollar a year. Recently, Margaret sent a letter to the Liberty Tribune newspaper, and I'd like to read it. It's classic Margaret. It was printed April 23rd. Thanks to the 639 voters who voted for and against me on April 7th, I am amazed that most people do not realize that the four honorary positions are pledged to carry out the office, but are honor-bound to do nothing, which is exactly what I will do for the dollar a year salary.
Yes.
Classic Margaret. Thanks for coming today, Margaret. So we'll get to that, and you can elaborate more on that later if you'd like. But to start out, can you just give us a little short sketch of your life, where you grew up, and a little bit about your family?
Yes, I was born in California, but about 3 years of age, my family moved to western Kansas. And they traded land in Golden, California, for land in Kansas, which I think was God's way of saying that we didn't have to worry about getting into heaven, because the rich don't get into heaven. Well, when you trade land in California for western Kansas land, and you go into the Depression, there's no problem. You just live on the land, and that's it. I enjoyed being living on a farm because I had many, many pets, and that was the fun thing to me about it. I was an outside child. I had a sister who liked to be inside, but to me, the fun was being out with the chickens and the cows and the pigs and all the pets that you got to have. I graduated from, well, I went 8 years to a one-room school, and then I went to high school in another county because in our county, they wouldn't even send a bus out to pick us up. So we had to live in town, and I graduated there. Then I went to K-State and worked my way through K-State, and am pleased to say that I am glad I went when it was $50 a semester, and I earned that money in the summer, and I worked for my board and room as I went through school, and I graduated and got married the same day. It was the only time my parents could come up, so we got married at 5:30, and then I graduated at 7:30 that night. And to me, the nicest honor was when I walked across the stage, President Eisenhower, who was the brother of your President Eisenhower, said, "Good work, Margaret." We were in a college that had only about 6,000 then, so our teachers knew us, and we knew each other, and it was very, very interesting. And then my husband made me three promises. We would never live in big cities, we would never live in the South, and he would never be a traveling salesman. Guess which three promises he broke? We lived in many big cities. We lived in Kentucky, we lived in Florida, we lived in Alabama, we lived in the Bahamas, and we lived in Puerto Rico. And so we've just traveled a little bit of everywhere, and I am a very much a believer in everybody's equal. So I did not get along very good in Kentucky the first year they desegregated, because I insisted that, you know, we should be just fair to all the black kids too. And then when we were in Alabama, we started a biracial group. And the Ku Klux Klan very happily called us and threatened to kill our children because they said they'd kill them on the way to school, so I had to drive them to school for a while. But we got a nice nursery started for the black children because the mothers were working for like $3 a day and leaving their kids home alone. And there had been a nice daycare for white children, but wasn't anything for black, so we got one started and had a real good time. And back then, when you gave blood, white blood went to white people, black blood went to black people. And so we've always given blood. My husband had given many, many gallons of blood. And so I went out and got people to do it, and then I donated blood, and you could donate blood to somebody else. So I wrote the lady's name down, and as I walked out the door, I turned and said, "Oh, by the way, she's black. Don't let me hear she didn't get what she needed. She had some kind of cancer and needed special blood." So they all gulped, but she got her blood. And then we moved up here to Liberty, which was a friendly but aloof town.
What year was that?
We came here in about 70.
And you had your children were still at home?
I had three of them.
Okay.
Two were, one in the service, one was married and gone. And so two were in high school and one was in grade school. But it was interesting because they asked me to speak at a special women's group, and I cannot remember the name of what group it was. They wanted to know about, you know, living in the Bahamas and in Puerto Rico and all. And it was very nice, and they were very polite and warm and friendly. And as I left, she thanked me, and then she said, "Oh, we are a restrictive group. You have to be invited to join." And I thought, And this was the feeling that I got from many people. Very friendly, but we are better than you because you haven't been raised here. And I had nothing to do because all my neighbors were working. So I applied for a job down on the square. It was just a secretary's job in a gas office. And I went in and talked to the gentleman. Yeah, it sounded like something I could do. And so I asked what the salary was. Well, it was $2 an hour. And I stood up and looked at him and said, "Well, sir, I was told that the courthouse faced south because this was a southern town, but I thought slave labor went out of style," and I got up and walked out. And little did I know he was the treasurer at my church. But, you know, somehow he never did speak to me again. It was interesting. So yes. I went to work for the school system for about the same price as a substitute and enjoyed it and got hired as the, I think they thought they were getting a police officer at Lewis and Clark because they had one big room with three teachers and about 90 kids and it was chaos. And so after 2 weeks I said, I can't do this. This isn't working. And they said, "Well, Margaret, we have to do something." So the teachers divided the children up and gave me the 10 problem children in the corner. I, who have a college degree, but not in teaching. But I loved the kids, and we had lots of fun. And I never remember names. I have 5 children. If they don't tell me their name once a week, forget it, I have. And I kept mixing up these 2 little boys. And one of them finally said, "Mrs. James, can't you tell us apart?" I said, "You mean because one of you is black and one of you is white, it's supposed to make a difference with me?" I'm still friends with the black one. That just threw him something terrible. But it was interesting because we had a little girl that was a problem, and she was out on the playground and she beat up somebody. So I went to get her and bring her in, and she wouldn't come, and I grabbed her and I scratched her. And I didn't mean to, but in doing it, I did that. And my mama's going to come beat you up. So the next day, the principal came down the hallway, and she was scared to death. Mrs. Flassing was such a sweet little old lady that did everything properly. I said, "Don't worry about it. I'll tell her my life story, and we'll get along." And so I explained why it happened, and I was sorry she got scratched, but I didn't give a hoot if she was black, white, or purple. She was going to behave like everybody else. Then I gave her my life history of all the things we'd done to help the black families. And who, 3 months later, was the only person that saw me in the hospital in North Kansas City when my husband was sick. She was working there, and she'd come over and eat with me. So, you know, we made good friends, but I didn't like a lot of things that were going on in the school, and so I ran for school board. But I had been working as an assistant teacher for a lady that, well, wasn't too thrilled, I don't think, with her work, because she did more of her own work than the kids. And so the superintendent decided it was time to fire me. So I got happily fired because I was going to run for school board. But I ran three times and then finally got on, and that was the day he retired. So, you know, we had our ups and our downs, and I was on for 6 years, and then I decided that was enough. And then a year later, I decided to run again because they were working for money for the new school. So I got out and, you know, did that and got back on for three more. So right now, I sit back and I wonder at some of the things that are going on with the school board, but, you know, you can't do everything. So my hobbies now are keeping a great grandchild, and I make quilts for foster children. When we had lived in Omaha, Nebraska, we had 11 different foster kids, and I know how lonely they can be, and they need something of their own. So these quilts are put in what they call backpacks of love. They get some clothes and a toy, and that's given by the officials that take children into foster homes. And they put in a quilt that we make. I've made over 2,000 of them in the, I don't know, I've been doing it for 15, 20 years.
And you've done them all yourself.
Yeah. Oh, they're not fancy ones. As the gentleman who gets them down at Festival of Sharing said one time, he said, "We look forward to your quilts because they're different." He didn't know what to say, because mine aren't fancy for what mothers want. They may have a picture in the center, and they have something that kids will like. Some for girls, some for boys, some for either one. And it's something that a child can keep and have forever for what they have. So it's nice. Fun to do. So right now, that's about all I do.
And you have your own pickup litter along the highway?
Oh, yeah. I've picked up a mile of the highway for 40 years. I was picking it up, and they put up somebody's name, and I asked why. And they said, well, he worked for the highway, and he wanted his name up. Well, he never picked it up. So I did it, and I've done it for 40 years. But I get thank yous from some people, and one time some boys were going by, and I had knelt down to pick up something, and they threw a bottle at me. And that the only thing I've ever been scared, because the bottle broke and crashed all over, but that's teenagers, you know, and that was a long time ago. The stinkiest thing I've ever found, because they ask you every year, what's the oddest thing you get? Well, there's this big white container, 5-gallon container, and I left it for a couple of days thinking somebody will come back and pick it up. They didn't, so I picked it up, and I thought, well, I wonder what's in it. Oh, it was what was left of somebody that had been frog fishing, and they'd taken the legs and left the rest of it. So I called the nature, and they said, no, it's out of season. He said, if you ever find out whose it is, you let us know. And I said, well, I'll tell you for sure, I got rid of the rest of the frog. It was plenty stinky. I have found everything. I have found coins. I have found two checks. One I could return to the writer, and one I sent on to the school because it was written out to the public school. And I found a watch for somebody. But other than that, it's just beer cans. And when I took the class that the city gave, when years ago you could learn about how the policemen did their job, they said if they ever stop anybody and they see beer cans, they automatically give them a ticket. And I held up my hand and I said, absolutely not. I have never had a drink in my life, because I can't stand that beer smells like what we used to slop the hogs on the farm. But you will seldom find my car without a beer can, because wherever I drive, I pick up cans, I don't care what kind they are, and I recycle them. Years ago, I made $350 a year off the cans I picked up, but now it's mostly bottles. People throw their water bottles out.
Oh, yes.
You don't get as many cans as you used to. I think they are recycling too. So it's, you know, interesting, something to do.
It's a good service for the community.
Well, it's, I try to tell people, why do you take a walk if you don't take a sack and pick up, you know, the trash around there?
Right.
It's hard for me to understand how anybody throws stuff out the window. The only thing that I let my kids throw out the window is apple cores, because birds like apples. No banana peels, no orange, but you can throw out the apple cores. So they used to tell me, well, let's get an apple. That's the only thing Mother lets us throw out the window. That's true.
Well, now, so we know you are not going to shirk on doing community service. What other kinds of things have you done for the community or been involved in the political climate? What have you
done?
Well,
let's see. When they had the diplomats for the Chamber of Commerce, we used to do a lot of things. Used to have a lot of ribbon cuttings in town, and we did things like that to go to them and help people out with that. But their town has gotten larger and not as personal as it used to be. You don't see any ribbon cuttings and personal things like that. And of course, being the world's worst teetotaler, I am not interested in what they're doing down on the square, because they always have liquor for everything they do, and if you have to have that, that's fine, but that doesn't include me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that even the annual parade that they have, they ruin it, not making it more local. They make it too commercial now. You know, I go down and see some of that, but no, other than that, I volunteer at school. And I help the teacher on Friday, what they call Friday folders, and like they're going to have their field day, and I'll volunteer and help with that, but that's all.
Okay. So. Now, we talked a little bit about the fact that you're a Methodist.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us the story, how that came to be?
Yes. I tell people that I was born in California, where grandfather was a Presbyterian minister, very conservative, and of course I was baptized Presbyterian, which of course I don't remember. And then we go out to Kansas and we go to church in the afternoon, because you do your work in the morning, you eat your meal, you go to church in a little country schoolhouse, and a Methodist minister was coming out there to do the preaching. So, you know, we joined the Methodist church, but I tell people, well, though I was baptized Presbyterian, I know I have to be a Methodist, because we not only believe in backsliding, we practice it. And we do, very much. Which is, we were never taught anything but really the golden rule. You know, we didn't have money for a lot of books or anything. So that's really what our Sunday school teachers taught us, was to be kind and to be helpful with your neighbors and not to be judgmental. And we had only one Catholic family around, and we used to love to go to their house, because two things: they ate goat meat, which nobody else had, and number two, when they asked the blessing, they could say their blessing faster than anybody anywhere in the world. All the boys were athletic and all the girls were good looking, and we were all friends. And so religion didn't divide people. It was just kind of fun to have and to do. But that was good memories of growing up.
For sure. Now, what about World War II? What do you remember about that era?
World War II was interesting, because we had an Air Force at Dodge City and an Air Force at Garden, and Cimarron was in between. That's where I went to school. So the GIs would come around, and they all had a pin that they said was for extra duty because they were in Kansas, and it wasn't. It was just for anything. And they wore signs that said MP, which was my initials, Margaret Pixley. So I said those were all my guys, because I didn't date in high school. and all the planes went, you know, we'd hear them fly over all the time. And one of them landed in a field where a former friend was teaching. She took the kids out there. And it was fun because the plane had written their name, they'd written on it, was Filthy McNasty. You know, the boys used to write names on their airplanes. And they would come out and they would deliberately chase the cattle on people's farms and make them unhappy. But that's where they did a lot of the training. And one time we had a blackout. Now that made sense on the coast, but in the middle of the United States, it made no sense at all. But that one evening, everything had to be blacked out. And I was helping clean at a lady's house who had a daughter that was in the Red Cross. And she had this light that she would never turn off because something would happen to her daughter. So we finally had to cover it with material because it was outside and it had to be a complete blackout. Which, of course, is ridiculous in Kansas. You know, you're 40 miles from the next town, and it just one of those things that you had to go along with one time to make everybody feel good. We had rationing. I showed the kids at school my rationing books the other day, and one of them said, well, how come you didn't use the little tickets in there? I said, because we lived on the farm. We didn't have money to buy much. We grew our own chickens, eggs, vegetables, but everybody had to have the tickets to get their food, and then they had the stickers on the windows of the cars to how much gasoline you could buy. But it was, you know, just things semi-ignored because you didn't use them that much, and it was. Interesting things, there would be shortages. I know my mother one time said they couldn't buy any toilet paper. They just couldn't get it. And I was working out in Colorado, and you could buy it anytime. So I bought a whole box of it and shipped it home to her. You know, one area would have something and another area wouldn't. But it was fun to work out in Estes Park because it was so pretty. And my job was to take care of this little boy. And the grandmother and the mother were there, and I got up and started the fire in the fireplace and got the food and took care of the baby and did the laundry. And I used to take him for walks downtown, and people would say, oh, your little girl is so cute. Well, it wasn't mine, it wasn't a girl. It was a little boy, but they had longer hair. And I'd say, thank you, because I liked him. He was a cute little kid. Grew up to be a doctor, I heard. So I've often wondered how he turned out. He was sort of like my own after having him for a couple summers like that.
That sounds really great. So tell me, what kind of changes have you seen in Liberty? I know you've seen a lot, but what really stand out in your mind?
I think the fact that when I came, people knew you, even though, as I say, they knew they were better than you because you were new, but you'd go in a grocery store and you would see people you knew all the time. And now you don't. There's, you know, it's so much larger. But the main difference was the fact that the blacks all knew each other and were interrelated and lived together. And they said my husband joined the Fellowship of Concern, which was the only biracial group. And I got to know many of them, and they said that something about they couldn't eat in the cafes. I said, you can too. So I went down to the hardware cafe and asked them, you know, if they'd set a table right in the middle that I was going to invite my black friends and we were going to eat a meal there. And they said, that's fine. So I called Ed Collins, who is the chief of police, and I said, Ed, they're having all these race riots, you know, in California, and there was one in here in Missouri in one of the colleges. I said, we're going to have a riot too. And he said, oh gosh, what are you doing now? I said, well, you can come join us. We're going to eat at the Hardware Cafe. So he did. He came and joined us. And we had the Spanish, because Angie Borgadelan is Spanish, and so black. And we had a lot of fun. And so we organized a group that met for 3 years. We had all sorts of people come and different talks and, you know, shared our differences. It was really fun, but we ate in different places all over town. And I had a sign that said, you know, you can join us. Anybody can come. If you're retired or lazy or just plain want something different to do, come join us and have something to eat. And it was fun for 3 years, but then we got to know each other, and the blacks could then realize they could eat anywhere they wanted to. So to me, that kind of thing is more important than my next door neighbor's Ed Chastain, and I love him dearly, but we disagree. This idea of protesting afterward, to me, is silly. You do something beforehand. And so I'm not one to get out and protest. It's you do something beforehand and try to help people get along.
You are definitely very proactive about things.
Yeah.
Any other things that come to mind about changes in Liberty or Missouri?
Well, the fact that there was absolutely no alcohol in this town when I came. It was a Baptist town. Really and truly, people told me the college was the most important thing, and they sort of ran everything. But now, it's totally different. Just alcohol every place you go. And to me, that's not exactly an improvement. But then that's life. You know, it's the same thing in the grocery stores. I just do not understand how people have to have something to make them express themselves. I don't have a problem, as you have understood. Not everybody likes that, but that's too bad. The school has grown so because the land across the highway has always been Liberty School District. And when the first houses were built there and people were coming into the Liberty Schools, they were complaining because those Kansas City people were coming into Liberty Schools. And I was on the school board, and I said, but that land has always been Liberty School District land, and they pay the taxes, like Walmart and all of that group now, and it really helps the taxes. But because they're building so many apartments over in the Kansas City side, it is crowding the school, and I know that.
Right. Now, when you moved here, did you live in the same house you live in now?
Yes.
Okay, and that is in Southview
Estates. Southland Estates, yeah.
But you weren't in Liberty City Limits, were you then?
Yes.
It was. Okay.
It always was in. And the next door neighbor, Chastains, are still there. Mm-hmm. The neighbor on the other side, we had the loveliest old couple, but they had to retire and go on. And then I had the neighbor from hell that lived there that got me illegally arrested. And that's why when they talk about all these blacks now being arrested and how they fight back, I thought, I have been handcuffed and put in a police car for something I did not do. And I had to go through all the court stuff, and I carry with me a piece of paper signed by the judge, said that this is based on incorrect information.
Wow.
Yes, and he has finally moved on. He put spotlights on my bedroom windows and flipped them on automatically every day at 4:05. It's really fun to have that, you know, and I was very grateful when they moved. I liked their children, and their son was real nice. I hear he's gone to be a doctor, but when he graduated from high school, I couldn't even say anything. I mailed him a letter, you know, next door, because he was a very nice young man.
Well, you know, we are coming down to the end of our interview time, and I really appreciate you taking the time to visit with us. Was there anything else you wanted to share before we sign off?
No, it's just that I think it's kind of sad that we're not personal contact like we were before. And that's why I do things like running for the treasurer, which is a joke. I love Harvey's always having a good contest to see whether he's
constable?
Yes, constable or not. And that's fun. But people don't get involved as much because there's so many more. now, and they have their meetings out of town. The Chamber of Commerce, the diplomats were fun because we got to know people in the different businesses that came to town, and you really felt part of it, but you don't do that now. And I don't go downtown because, as I tell people, it's liquors and lawyers, and I don't really like either one very well. Isn't that awful? But it's true, and I have lawyer friends.
Margaret, I really appreciate you coming in. It's been a delight to talk to you and listen to your stories. So in conclusion, today is May 2nd, 2015. I'm Norma King, and I've been interviewing Margaret James. And thank you again.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.